Hello again. This is Dolores Cannon with the Metaphysical Hour. Back again, and we're live right now. What's that?
Oh, I don't know. Something was buzzing. Maybe we've got gremlins in my office also.
Well, I know it's not a caller this early in the show.
No. We brought them in.
Oh, I hope not. Okay, for the listeners, we've been joking about, you know, 2 weeks ago we had a lot of problems with little strange things happening on the line. So we wanted to make sure we didn't have any gremlins, and that's what we're talking about. I hope that's not what it is. Okay, we'll just proceed, and I hope everything's going to go okay. But last time he kept disconnecting us. All right, before I bring on my guest, so let me give you out the 800 number, the toll-free number first, if you want to call in. The toll-free number is 877-876-5227. 877-876-5227. That's the toll-free number if anyone wants to call in tonight. And before I get to my guest, I just want to remind everyone that I am starting my classes again, and I'm going to have about 20 classes this year. But the first one is going to be in Los Angeles, and that's going to be in a couple of weeks. So if anybody wants to sign up for that, to call our office and find out all the details about it. And you remember my website is www.ozarkmountain, that's OZARKMT.com. And we have listings of all the classes, and my schedule and everything is on that website. Or my 800 number, which is 1-800-935-0045, to find out more about the classes. Okay, well, I've got a very special guest tonight, and I think you're going to find her very interesting. This is Toni Trimble, and she lives down in Texas. And if you remember a few years ago, there was the movie out about the Horse Whisperer, and it was very popular. Well, Toni, you know, I would call you a horse whisperer, but you're a lot more than that, aren't you?
Yes, I sure am, Dolores.
Because Toni can communicate with horses, and she does this on a large scale. Because you said all the ranches around you are always calling you and having you talk to their horses and find out what's wrong with them. Isn't that true?
That's correct.
So, and you also, you told me something I didn't know, you can also communicate with pets that have crossed over.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, well, why don't we start first? I always like to do background. Toni, tell us how you got started in all this. You know, when did it all begin?
Well, of course, I've been able to communicate with animals all my life, but, you know, the natural flow of your life interferes when you get married and you have children, and you get kind of wound up in the everyday, just basic living. And about 15 years ago, I was at a clinic, a horseback riding clinic, and this woman, who was one of the clinicians, asked me if I knew what was wrong with her horse. And she said, "They tell me that you can communicate with horses." And I said, "Well, yes, but I haven't done it for the public. I just do it for my family and friends." And so one thing led to another, and she was quite amazed that everything I had said. I didn't, unbeknownst to me, 2 days before, the vet had diagnosed this horse with several different ailments.
Yeah.
And so then she told one friend, and they told two or three more. And as a result, now I have more than, probably 4,000 clients on my client base. And I read for people for as far away as Jakarta and Australia to the U.S.
Well, that's a lot of people. I didn't realize you had that many.
Well, it's grown a lot in the last couple of years since I've seen you, Dolores.
So everything has been growing for you then?
It really has.
And, well, I know when I first met you, you said one problem was sometimes ranchers would call up and want you to, you said you could do it on the telephone, too.
Yes, that's correct.
That you were diagnosing as many as 20 horses in one call, and that would take hours, and they were kind of overdoing it.
Yes, they kind of got a little carried away. It's sort of funny when you begin to talk to someone like me, all of a sudden all these questions come up, and then it, instead of the one or two horses they wanted to talk about originally, it just blossoms into however many they have on their ranch or in their training program and things like that. So
that was about the time you decided you were going to have to charge, too, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. I mean, I did it for a long time without charging people because I just thought that that's what I was supposed to do. But when it interferes with the rest of your ability to make a living, then you have to do something, and that's when I started charging.
Yeah, we got a couple of emails in the last week, and people are quite indignant. They said, we don't think you should charge for anything that's spiritual. How can you do that? If it's supposed to be spiritual, it's supposed to be free. And I was thinking, well, that's not the way it works in the real world.
No. Well, you know, I do a lot of things for free for people. For instance, when I'm looking for a lost pet, of course, I don't charge for that. And it's difficult to find them to begin with. And I have about an 85% success rate. So, and if people call me, you know, I have one older lady who's in her late 80s, and sometimes she just wants to talk to her son who passed away unexpectedly.
Oh.
And I don't charge her for that.
Well, see, I didn't know you could also communicate with humans. You do it all, don't you?
Well, yes. You know, when you end up being a natural clairvoyant, you finally end up having to admit that, yes, and embrace the whole thing. You know, at first I was only comfortable with animals, and as time's gone on, I'm much more comfortable with people and passed over people and pets.
Because I know at the beginning you were trying to keep it quiet, but you live way out away from people, don't you?
Yes, my ranch is quite a ways from town. It's a 30-minute drive or better for me to just go to the grocery store.
Well, you were trying to remain private and keep it, you know, like that, but you said people began finding out about you, and it just spreads, I guess.
It really does, and I just think that the universe, when they're ready for you to do the work you agreed to do when you came here, word gets around no matter what you do to try to stop it. And as far as charging for it, you know, anything that you do that consumes 6 or 8 hours of your day, you end up having to be paid for it, because how do you pay your bills, you know, your light bill and your gas bill and things like that, you know? So I think it's kind of unfair to just assume that when you are in service to people that you don't charge for it.
Yeah, that was what I was thinking. This email I told you about that I got, they just said, oh, that's not right, because you're working with spiritual things that you should charge money. And I was thinking, well, if they work at a job, they're getting paid. You know, they wouldn't work for free.
Well, of course not. And don't you agree that even the healers and the people in the Bible and all the old-time healers, they weren't paid in maybe cash money. People didn't have the money to pay them, but they brought them food, they brought them fuel, oil,
yeah,
you know, things of that nature. So I think in retrospect, we've always had to charge.
Yeah, it was always a barter system back in those days.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm beginning to come out more, too, you know, because I live here in the Bible Belt, the real small town, and I used to worry for a long time, what were people going to think? When I travel, you know, I travel all over the world, that's different. They seem to know what I do because of the books, and they accept it. But around here, I've tried to live two lives, you know, a balanced life. And I didn't want them to know what I did, and I've tried to keep it a secret. But now it's getting to the point I just figure I don't care anymore, you know. If they don't understand it, it's their problem.
Well, I think eventually we all have to come to that decision, because I, too, live in a very strict Bible-oriented part of the state of Texas. I was saying to some friends today that, you know, if the buckle of the Bible Belt goes right over my little town. And,
yeah.
you know, I think that as time goes on, and my goodness, look at the television programs that are on now, such as Medium and Paranormal State and things that are on mainstream TV. It's pretty hard to avoid the spiritual work that you or I have been involved in for a long time.
Yeah, it's beginning to open people up more.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the way they're doing these shows because they're not ridiculing. They're showing it the way it really is.
I feel the same way, and I think it's a very positive, healthy thing. I think it takes the fear out of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that movie, What the Bleep, was the one that started it all, you know, a few years ago. I don't know if you saw that one or not.
No, I didn't.
What the Bleep, Do We Know? When they did that, it started people thinking toward the metaphysical. And after that, it seems like now they're having more and more. The documentaries and things like that. I'm filming, when I go to L.A. for the class, I'm going to be filming for another documentary out there, and I'm going to film for another one in July. So these are beginning to become more mainstream.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad to see it, aren't you?
Yeah, because I think it is, it's very subtle, but it is changing the way that people think who accept this, that it's nothing really wrong with it at all. We're all trying to help people.
Oh, I so agree.
Tell me, what happens whenever you are working with a horse? You know,
well,
what is it like? You know, what do you do?
Well, usually when people call me, I ask them to just say the horse's nickname for me or what they call him every day. And then it kind of varies between each individual horse. Sometimes I get like a little video clip of what's going on with their body. Sometimes I see the body as just a skeleton. And sometimes the horses just hold up a foot or something and say, you know, my foot is sore here.
Oh, okay.
So it just kind of depends. And some horses are more willing to talk to me than others, although I've only had one that didn't want to talk to me, and it was because he was afraid of the owner's reaction to it.
Oh. What do you mean? He was wanting to be helped, though, wasn't he?
He did want help, but he was afraid that the owner would get angry if he said why that he had been hurt. And
oh,
I told the horse that wasn't our issue, that all I wanted to know is what I could do to help him become healthy again.
Uh-huh.
And then he just started chatting away.
Well, I think that's pretty good if you work with that many, that you only had the one who wouldn't talk.
It's pretty unusual that they won't talk to me. Most of the time they're so happy to just that someone is actually communicating with them that sometimes the owner will just say, are they done? Are we finished with that horse? You know, because they're in a hurry. They want to move on to the next one. So,
yeah.
Because
the horse doesn't, you know, people doesn't even realize, people don't even notice them. They don't understand. They can't communicate.
Well, that's it. And I try to explain to everybody that I am not a veterinarian, that all I can do is tell them from their horse's perspective what is bothering them at this moment.
Uh-huh. Okay. Because, so I was trying to think. You said you see, like, a video clip in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And then, or the skeleton or something. But it is very visual what you do anyway.
A lot of it is, yes. And I think maybe the difference between the kind of work I do and some other animal communicators is that I have owned and ridden competition horses for 35 years.
Oh.
And I do know their conformation. I do understand their illnesses. And so it's easier, I think, in a lot of respects for a horse to talk to me because I do have that background.
Yeah, you can identify it with it a whole lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
But I had another animal communicator on almost about a year ago, but she mostly just worked with pets. But she seemed to hear them in her mind. I don't know if she saw anything visual or not, but they would just talk to her. But you're mostly dealing with the health issues.
Yes, predominantly. And most of my clients are high-performance horses, horses from the racehorse world, from the barrel racing world, cutting horses, high-dollar jumping horses.
Mm.
This would be the equivalent of a Michael Jordan is to the sports world.
Uh-huh. Okay, that's why they're wondering about to take care of their horses, and that's why they're open to talking to someone like you, even if it's not orthodox.
Yes, in many cases, yeah, because they've been to the veterinarian, they've gone through all the, jumped through all the hoops trying to find out what's wrong, and a lot of times that's when I get a phone call. Because it's a subtle problem, and if the veterinarian wasn't able to find it, and this horse is worth a lot of money, they're willing to try anything in order to get the horse well.
Mm. Yeah, I can understand that. That's why, like you said, we don't have to hide anymore because people are willing to accept these kind of things. It's no longer considered the woo-woo.
Exactly.
As one of my clients the other day said, I work with the woo-woo world. So okay. But, hold on, just thinking, can you tell us some stories of some things that have happened?
Oh, gosh, yeah, lots of stories. One really comes to mind. I have a client in Mississippi, and she called about a pleasure horse. It's a division of performance horse, and this was a young horse, and he had some pretty severe lameness on his hind legs.
Uh-huh.
So we talked about that, and I told her during the reading some herbs to use and this sort of thing. And I said, but you know, the main thing that you need to do with this horse is ask your angels to come in and bring about a healing. Well, this horse had a little friend that was in his pasture, and it was a little donkey named Eeyore. And Eeyore was much more talkative than the horse Aaron. But anyway, so I told Eeyore to help his friend and call in the angels and ask for a healing. And I got a phone call about 2 days later, and my client said, Tony, the most amazing thing happened. She said, I went out to the barn, and there were these two big, huge white cranes. And she said, I mean, they were about 4 feet tall. And there were two of them sitting on my fence post when I went out to feed after I talked to you. And
what, there were white what?
Cranes, you know, big
cranes.
Birds.
Yeah, cranes. So,
uh-huh.
Yeah.
And so she said, I told the cranes when I walked by that Aaron was not feeling well, and would they help us bring about healing to my horse? And so she said, I went out and fed him, and she said, the next morning I got up and went out to feed, and she said, there were two piles of feathers about 2 feet high where those birds had been sitting.
Huh.
Now, the birds weren't dead. It was just their feathers. And she said, I went into the barn, and my horse could get up. He could walk around. There was no pain, and all the swelling was down.
Wow.
And she said, I took it to mean that, you know, the angels were those two birds that were sitting on my fence post.
Because they can take any kind of a form they want to.
Of course.
You know, we just expect them to look one way, but they can look any way they want to.
Yeah, and there are angels in the animal kingdom, and they do have lots of little cherubs and things like that around them.
Well, I always think of that as like the divas, the nature spirits.
Yes, it's very similar.
You know, in the old days, it was the fairies and the gnomes and the elves.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're thinking about. You're calling them angels, but it is little people, isn't it?
It is. It's little people. And that brings up the other story that this is what started, I guess, my whole reputation with people. About the second or third time I ever did a reading for anybody, this woman called me, and it was about, 6 or 7 o'clock at night. And she said, my horse is in the barn, and he's terrified, and he's leaning up against the wall, and he's shaking from head to toe.
Wow.
And he's been doing this for about a week, and I don't know what's going on. So I asked the horse what was wrong, and he said, little people are eating my food.
Oh.
And I said, well, how am I going to tell the owner this? she's going to think I'm crazy. And so finally I just said, you know, I don't know how you're going to take this, and I don't know what to make of it, but I see these little creatures. I don't know what they are, but he says little people are eating his food, and they're screaming at him, and he's afraid to go near his bucket. Well, of course, you know, she hung up, thanked me very much, and hung up. And about a month later, now it's about 10 o'clock at night, and I'm going to bed, and my phone rings. And she said, I don't know if you'll remember me, but I'm the lady that called you, and you told me that little people were eating my horse's feet. She said, my husband just went from the biggest skeptic to the biggest believer. I said, well, okay. And she said, we just walked in from the barn, and you won't believe what we found. She said, there were four little monkeys all dressed in human clothes, and they were in my horse's feed trough, and they were screaming at him and chasing him out of his feed trough.
Oh.
And she said, we called the police, and it turns out that these little monkeys had escaped from a circus act and had been on the run for over 2 weeks. And when they finally were captured, when they were eating out of this horse's bucket, and she said apparently they'd been escaping at night and going to our barn and eating and then going back, but now they've been gone for 2 weeks. And when we called to report it, it turns out that the monkeys were from this, circus act. And I said, well, no wonder he thought they were little people, because what else was he supposed to think?
Yeah, they were dressed in clothes. Oh, I think that's amazing. It turned her husband into a believer.
Oh, yes. She said he'll never doubt you again. And to this day, that's been 10 or 12 years ago, I still get calls from people saying, aren't you the one that told that lady that little people were eating her horse's feed?
Because I was thinking you were going to talk about fairies or elves or something, but that's a real one.
Exactly.
Oh, that's different. I don't think I've ever heard a story like that before. Okay. But I think it's amazing that you don't have to be with the animal to diagnose it or to find out what's wrong with it or to talk to it.
Well, you know, and that's one of the comments people always bring up to me. And they'll say to me, how can you explain that? And I tell them, honestly, I don't know how to explain it. I just know that as soon as you say that name to me, it sets up a vibration or telecommunication, if you want to call it that, with your animal. So it doesn't matter if I've had five horses in a day that come to me with the name Bubba or something. It just is individual, that vibration between myself and that horse as soon as they say their name.
Sure.
And I am more comfortable doing it over the phone as opposed to being in person with the horse.
Why are you more comfortable?
I don't know. I think it's because when I'm involved in their energy field, sometimes horses have a very powerful energy field. It can radiate out 15 feet away from the horse's body.
Yeah.
And sometimes when you get inside that intense energy field, it can upset you a little bit. I'm a lot better with it now than I used to be, because I've had to do it more.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I was trying to think, what do you mean upset you? Just the, like you're thinking or what? Or you're...
No, they give me, a lot of times they'll make me feel the same sensations that they're having.
Oh, like an empath.
Yes. And so if they've got a real upset stomach or their breathing is real compromised, I start having problems breathing.
Oh, because, you know, I work a lot. A lot of my clients are healers, and they work with energy.
Mm-hmm.
And we're finding out, you know, that they're even teaching this over in Fayetteville. You can do energy healing, absent healing. You don't have to be in the vicinity of the person. You just have to know where they are. It's rather like Edgar Cayce used to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had people on the show who appeal people half a world away, because they say that energy doesn't matter, that you can pick up that on that person's energy field and do it. You don't have to be in the same room with them.
That's
true. I guess it's the same thing, really.
Yes, that's true.
Uh-huh.
I actually had someone call me just the other day, and while I was sleeping the night before she called, she had come to me while I was sleeping and was, I guess, wanting to contact me earlier or something. And she said the most amazing thing happened. All of a sudden, I got all these symbols and circles and triangles and mandalas and things like that. And I said, oh, that's too funny, because I said, I am really delving into sacred geometry lately, so maybe you were picking up on that. I don't know.
Uh-huh. But she was coming to you beforehand to kind of set you up, I guess, in some way.
Yes, and she's a healer herself, and I think she just was tapping into my energy field remotely.
Uh-huh. But, you know, there are a lot of these healers that come to me as clients, and some of them are empaths, which is not a good thing to be. And they have to learn to turn it off, because they said when they're working on people, they take on the symptoms that the person has. And a good healer has got to learn how to let that go. You know, you can feel sympathy and compassion, but then you have to release it once you've done the work, not take it on your own body.
I find that very much a problem to me when in the early years that I was doing this, and I was very lucky because of someone like Doreen Virtue, because of another mentor I've had named Sean Harabents. They really explained to me the absolute need to protect myself, to not get so empathic with an animal or a person that I fall into that abyss with them, you know.
Uh-huh.
And it is a learned technique, I do believe.
Uh-huh. Yes, Doreen is a really good friend of mine, and I know she's very much into this. But that's what I try to work with people, because it is hard to let it go sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there are techniques to release it and not take it on your own body.
Yes, and a lot of the people that I teach at seminars, they go on to do healing work. And even though I try to emphasize the need to hold their space sacred, to cleanse their aura when they're finished at the end of every day and things like that,
Yeah. They
don't really believe me, I don't think, until they get out there and they start working. And they're getting sick, or they get lung problems when they've worked on a horse that's got lung problems, you know. And yeah, then they are running back to me going, oh, help, what happened, you know?
Yeah, a lot of them probably think, well, I can take care of myself. But there's an awful lot of energies, and there are, you know, energy, it's all, everything is just energy, and positive and negative. And there can be some discordant energies, too, that we can take on without realizing it. So that's the idea, I guess, is just to release it and not hold it.
Very much so. And I find with animals, horses in particular, because a lot of times they suffer a lot of punishment at the hands of a trainer or someone of that nature that is not very spiritual.
Yeah.
They hold that in their energy field, and it makes them very sad. And, you know, a lot of times if I don't do anything else for the horse but just help him with a flower essence to release that memory out of the cell memory in the brain, that by itself brings a lot of healing. And people that, too, can use those kinds of things to help themselves. As you know, the work that we do is very, very taxing, and you have to really be careful how much work you do per day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why I limit the number of clients I see.
Mm-hmm.
But you said they're calling you all day long.
Well, they do, and, you know, I've learned to just leave my office phone in the office. I disconnected the phone from my home now because I have to have time to regenerate, rejuvenate, quiet my own mind, meditate, those sort of things, and you can't do that when the phone's going off.
Well, I know our phone rings all day and all night because we get calls from all over the world.
Yeah.
But at night, I don't have this unlisted number on my home number, but the office phone will go into the people that work for me. It goes into their house. Of course, they can choose whether to answer it or not.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you have to have that time alone, and people don't understand that.
No, a lot of times, you know, and I'm sure you get this, well, why can't you just work 8 to 5 every day? I'd be dead,
Yeah.
We can't do it. I mean, the energy expenses, that's harder for me than to work on my ranch for 8 hours on a Saturday as opposed to 8 hours in my office.
It's harder, you mean?
Mm-hmm. The office work is much harder for me than to go out and be building fence or something like that, which I do on the weekends.
Uh-huh.
And the physical labor is much easier for me than the mental and emotional effort that it takes to do my work.
Well, you know, last week I had a man on. He's a friend of mine from New Zealand, and he's a trans-channel. And he will stay in trance most of the day, you know, working with people that call or he has sessions with them. And he agrees. I don't think that's good because he says when he gets finished, he goes to the gym and has to work out. And you got to get back in touch with your physical body again.
Yeah, that's what I found would happen to me. I would get ungrounded or disconnected from the physical body. And when I took a seminar with Doreen, she said it's no good if you're not in your body. You cannot help people when you are not inhabiting your own body. When you're outside the body and you're in the ethereal world, that's not helpful. And so I took that to heart, and I really worked at, you know, staying connected to the physical being so that I didn't just drift off, you know.
Mm-hmm. Of course, I had one client who said she felt she didn't like the world. She didn't want to be here. She felt more comfortable for most of her life staying out of her body. So she was, she was usually diagnosed with depression and all of that, but she just did not want to be in her body, which is, you know, you've got to be here. You've got to live here.
Yeah, but that's our challenge, isn't it?
Yeah. That's why I had to did a lot of counseling with her, because she finally figured it out that she couldn't stay out of her body all the time. She had to be in it.
Mm-hmm.
But then she had to deal with emotions and other people's emotions, which she wasn't used to doing. It's easier, I guess, just to be like a zombie, if you want to call it that.
Well, that's probably why we've got a lot of people doing drugs nowadays, you know?
Yeah.
It's challenging to live in this earth plane.
They want to shut off the emotions and all of that, you know?
I think so.
Huh. But I tell people, if you don't take care of it now, you're going to have to come back and do it again.
That's true.
Do it right the first time, anyway. Okay. But, like you said, you do train horses, too, and you work with them. Do you, you know, I was thinking like the movie The Horse Whisperer, but that you do more than that. When you're doing that, or is it easier for you to train the horses by communicating with them?
Well, that's an interesting question. It depends. Because of my energy field, it isn't always very pleasant to the horse that I'm riding.
Oh.
So I have learned now that I can only ride and train my own horses, because I have had some rather unsettling experiences getting on other people's horses, and they're not used to my energy field. And they'll bolt and take off with me.
Because you have a stronger energy field. Is that what you mean?
Yes. And it's not comfortable for the horse. You know, it's almost as though, a cougar would jump on their back. Because, of course, when you're riding, you're sitting over the most vulnerable part of the horse's body. And if this horse is not used to me or is frightened of me, or, you know, I had an instance where a trainer said, well, just get on that horse over there and ride him and he'll be fine. And, you know, I looked at the horse and I knew immediately he wasn't going to be fine with me getting on him.
Mm.
And I told this man that. I said, no, I'm not going to ride that horse. And he'll hurt somebody and you need to ride him until he gets over that. Well, of course, he poo-pooed it. Being a man, he just thought that I was chickening out or something. And 2 weeks later, one of my best friends got on that horse to ride the horse, and he bucked her off and broke her shoulder.
Oh.
And so, you know, when I told her, I said, I wish I had said something to you, but I thought it was her boyfriend. I said, I really thought your boyfriend was going to tell you that. And so, you know, now I don't have that argument with that guy anymore, but I just tell people now, no, I don't want to get on your horse. I can watch you ride that horse, and I'll be happy to tell you what your horse is thinking while you're riding it and what to do to improve your performance.
Uh-huh.
But I cannot get on your horse.
Well, the horses that you have are used to your energy, though.
Oh, yes, very much so. Yeah, and I don't have any problem with them. I've got all age horses. I have one that's a yearling now, and I have an older mare who's 23, and then I have a couple of three-year-olds that'll be going to what's known as a futurity this December. But, yes, I get along with them just fine. And I don't ride them on the days that they're not in a good mood. I just go out and ask them, how are you feeling today? Do you want to go for a ride? And if there's any hesitation, I just forget it for the day.
Uh-huh. Where a lot of people wouldn't even be aware of that.
No.
But it's also with racehorses. I was wondering, do you ever have a tendency to bet on any of these?
You know what? I am awful at betting on a racehorse. But now if I'm sitting at the racetrack with a friend, I can tell him, yes, bet on this one, and this one. And about 80% of the time, they'll win money. But to go put $2 on the nose for myself, no, I lose every single time.
Oh, okay. I was thinking maybe you'll start a whole new career in advising people at the racetrack.
Yeah, I don't know about that. It's enough. One of the horses that I read for this past year was Street Sense that won the Kentucky Derby.
Oh.
I've read for a horse named Funny Side, and, of course, Barbaro. I got a call about him when he got hurt at the Preakness, and I did all I could to try to help them save that horse. But, you know, when the veterinarians are using him as a guinea pig and experimenting on him, not much I could do there, but that broke my heart. His picture is on my desk, and it reminds me to have courage every day.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of times, you know, they won't go against the veterinarians.
No, uh-uh. They think that they're right there next to God, you know.
Well, it's the same thing with people and doctors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the same way.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's our culture. We're brought up to believe that.
We give them a tremendous amount of power when actually we can do these things ourselves without even realizing it. You know,
no, right? Absolutely.
We put it off on somebody else to take care of us and do things for us, you know. Hmm.
Kind of the human being, and that's what humans tend to do, isn't it?
Yeah. But talk about the ones you said you also help people communicate with pets that have died. But are they just wanting to know if the pet's okay or what?
Well, a lot of times, for instance, I'll have a horse that dies under very mysterious circumstances. In one instance, this was just recently, a horse was shot. Uh-huh. And it was with a small caliber rifle. And the vet missed that. And they came home and found the horse dead. And of course, this woman was just grieving. I mean, you know, grief for an animal is just as intense as it is for a human being, and sometimes I think even more so, because an animal is just unconditional love, you know. But she was so distraught over finding her horse dead and blaming herself that maybe something she could have done to prevent it. But there really was nothing, and the horse was fine and told me it was fine on the other side, and actually was with another horse of hers that had passed away several years ago. And when we were through talking, she was very comfortable with the fact that it wasn't her fault. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times that's what they're really wanting to know most of all is, you know, could I have done something? Is my dog mad at me because I had to put them down, you know, this sort of thing.
The guilt.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I have people that email me and they're always saying, Do dogs have spirits? Do animals have spirits? Pets have spirits? Do they, where do they go? Do they go on to the other side? Of course, I know they do. They all have spirits, just like we do. But they always want to know that. Is their pet, did he survive to the other side? But you've found that, haven't you?
Oh, yes, all the time.
It's logical to me, but most people it's not. Do you want to address that?
Well, I tell you, the main thing that I say to people when they bring that up to me is that, you know, well, my preacher told me that animals don't have a soul.
That's what I mean. Uh-huh.
You know, and I say to them, you know, in the Bible, if you will look, it says that God knows when every sparrow falls. So if he's watching that little individual sparrow, if it doesn't have a soul, why is he interested?
Uh-huh, yeah.
You know, and they don't know what to say to that. And these animals, to me, are the purest soul that God sends here. And they're here to help us have that, learn that unconditional love. I don't know how many times I've said to people, you know, you scolded your dog, and you locked him out, he wet in the house, and you put him outside. What's the first thing he does when he comes in? And she said, well, he jumps up in my lap and gives me a kiss. And I said, yes, so, well, you know, he's forgot all about it, you know. That's that unconditional love. They don't carry a grudge. They're not angry with us. When a horse gets punished and, you know, they put it in the stall and they say to me, you know, I'm just going to let him think about it. And it's always funny to me because it'll be the very person who's just said that a horse doesn't have a soul, they don't think, they just react. And, you know, I look at them and go, are you paying attention to what you're saying here? Because I don't believe God would have incarnated anything on the planet that didn't have a soul.
Mm-hmm. It has to have that spark of life in it.
I think so.
Uh-huh. Hmm. And I always tell people that I know they survive and they do go on to the same place that people go. I don't think there's any distinction. Maybe they have their own separate heaven, but they definitely do, their soul survives, and they go on to the other side.
Well, you know what's funny to me? Whenever I do a mediumship for either a person or an animal, I have yet ever to look on the other side and not see an animal with a group of people.
Oh, that's interesting.
You know, there's always a cat, a dog. Sometimes I'll see a horse. One time I saw a monkey. Another time I saw a pet parrot.
Hmm. Because that was one of the theories that people have told me, that they want to know, will I find my pet dog or pet cat when I cross over? Will they be there? Because sometimes they're very close with them. Or will they be in a separate place or what? But that's interesting that you've seen them in the same place.
Well, I do all the time. And 2 or 3 weeks ago, I had a lady call, and her mother had passed away, and she was having a very difficult time with her mother's passing. And the reason she called me is because her dog became very ill, and it was at the veterinary clinic, and she was so afraid that, you know, the horse was, or the dog was going to cross, and I knew the dog was going to cross over, and I said, you know, what you need to do is just tell him that it's okay if he needs to go. And the dog actually had belonged to her mother, and what was happening was the dog was grieving so at the loss of her mother that all he could think of was being on the other side with her.
Oh, uh-huh.
And he developed cancer, and it spread to the bones, and they had done a lot of things. And, you know, I said, if he makes it through the night, there are some things that we can do to help him. But then the next day I got a call from her, and she said, you know, and I knew when the dog crossed. It was about 8:30 at night because I was just finishing dinner. And all of a sudden this dog came to me and said, just tell her that I'm happy now. And when she called the next day, I said, I'm to tell you that your dog is happy now. His name's Conrad. I said, Conrad wants me to tell you he's happy now and he's with your mom.
He's with you, with your mother. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, you know, that's the same thing I found in my work, that people give themselves the diseases. And especially if they're grieving and they want to, maybe their husband or their mother or whatever has died and they want to go on with them, you actually can make yourself sick to leave this planet if that's what you want to do.
Oh, I agree. You're the first person I've heard say that, and I totally agree with you.
Well, that's what I do in my work, is we try to find out why the person is just given themselves this disease or this illness. And sometimes it is grieving, sometimes it's anger, it's all kinds of reasons.
Oh, how
it
interesting.
It all fits together beautifully.
Do
but,
you
well,
find...
I published a book by these two women who, up in Canada, I've had them on the show. The name of the book is My Teachers Wear Fur Coats.
Okay.
And they use Reiki on animals. And they were just talking about how you could use Reiki energy to help the animals. But, you know, in a way, I have the feeling they are using too much. They're going overboard to extraordinary measures to keep the animal here when I think it really wants to go on.
You know, I would agree with that. And there are times that an animal will say, I just want to leave. I want to go home.
Uh-huh.
And it's very difficult for a lot of people to deal with that information because they live in that linear world where they think that when you die, that's it.
Yeah.
And when I encounter that, I mean, there's no way that I can, in a half hour or an hour session, try to explain to them, and their minds are not open to it either at that point.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes the animal has taken on their illness. You know, like I've got a couple of dogs that have come to me that have taken the cancer that the person had into their own body
uh-huh.
in an effort to save their owner.
Yes, I've had so these two women have talked about, too, that the cat or the dog would take on the symptoms that the owner had.
Mm-hmm.
So in that way, they become an empath also.
They do. And you have to be careful, and I've told people, you know, don't tell your dog or tell your horse that you don't need to take this on. I will beat my disease on my own. That isn't your job,
yeah.
You know. But there are times when I've had healers that go too far. They get carried away. They, especially with an energy healing like Reiki.
Yeah.
You have to be really careful with what you're doing there.
Well, this one, she said she doesn't sleep hardly at all. She has different animals she works on, and she alternates them. And it's like every hour or so she has to work on a different animal by sending them energy. But some of them are very ill, but I think she's hurting herself. That's going overboard.
Oh, absolutely.
And a lot of these animals are very ill, but she feels she has to constantly be sending them the energy to keep them alive when maybe they want to leave.
You know, see, that is a difficult subject because, you know, people will say, well, should I just put this dog down? Well, I have to tell him it's not my call. That's
uh-huh.
God's domain, not mine.
Uh-huh.
And an animal, I believe, knows there's a beginning, a middle, and an end. And if it's not about quantity of life, but quality.
Which goes to people, too.
It does.
Uh-huh.
And I think that sometimes our medical profession goes to extremes.
Oh, yeah. Because I've had doctors on the show, you know, who are they're going over into the natural healing, and it's the same way. Well, one of them said the book I published was Why Healing Happens. It was written by a doctor, and he was talking about that no one dies unless they want to die. They make a contract to die, and they're going to die this certain way at this certain time, and it doesn't do any good to prolong that and keep them alive once they want to leave. And he said when he was working in the hospital, he was a supervisor, and that there were older people, and they would have the code blue, you know, the heart had stopped, and they wanted everybody to come to the room. He said he would just take his time. To him, the person wanted to go. They didn't want to be saved. And he would take his time getting to the room. And he said there were a lot of times he had to talk to the families, and he would say, let Grandma go. She wants to leave. She doesn't want to be here in that body.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they said people don't understand.
That I don't believe they do either.
It's the family. It's not the person. The person's ready to go.
Yes, and I find that people, because of guilt, because of a sense that they weren't doing enough or didn't do something right, keep trying to correct it when we're not in control anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with an animal. There's only so much you can do, and there's wonderful healing modalities out there now. There's equine chiropractors and dog chiropractors and acupuncturists and herbs that, you know, years ago weren't available, and all kinds of healing machines like a chi machine and a photonic torch and a lot of things that are available now that you can go back and forth using on people and animals, although they're not supposed to tell you you can use it on people. But, you know, and so you can make the quality of life better. But if there's a major illness or a major breakdown, all you can do is keep that animal comfortable. You're not going to cure it, and you have to be careful, I think, thinking that you could take God's place or affect a cure when maybe you can't, you know?
But that's what I was thinking. It's the same with an animal with a person. When the person is miserable or the animal is miserable, why prolong that if you can't do anything to help them?
Yes, and a lot of times when I do a mediumship reading for an animal, they've had to put the animal down. The first thing that comes to me is that their breathing stops, and that's when I usually, they don't usually tell me they put the animal to sleep. But when I feel that sensation, I ask them, you know, did you have to put this dog to sleep? And then I get, well, yes, you know, and I said, okay, well, I need to look beyond that as to what the cause of death was, if that's what you want to know. But, you know, they said
that is the cause of death, but something else led up to it.
Right. Something else brought that about, but this is what actually caused them to cross. But they feel guilty that maybe that dog is going to be mad at them, but that isn't how an animal thinks. They're just like, thank you for loving me enough to let me go.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they're a lot different than humans are in that respect.
Oh, yeah, they're very pragmatic. They understand it. They understand the universe.
Uh-huh. I don't know how anyone can look in a dog or a cat's eyes and think there isn't a soul in there, because they're you can see it. You can just, you know, in an animal.
Oh, I know. You know, that's a funny thing when you say cats. You know, cats are a very different animal to read for. They are completely their own little person. And you can't train them very well. I mean, you can ask them not to do things, but when they're ready to go, they leave. My son had a cat for right at 18 years. And last summer, he came to me in a dream, and he said, will you please come and get me? I'm going to die soon, and I can't die here. And because he knew how much my son loved him, and my daughter-in-law has a couple of little Jack Russells that aren't very nice to cats. And so he was getting older and a little infirmed, and he couldn't hear or see as well anymore. And so I said, yes, absolutely. And I called my son and said, well, I'll take you out to dinner, but I need to take Mariah home with me because he wants to come home for a while. I couldn't tell him that he wanted to die.
Yeah.
And the next morning, he was looked like he was asleep on my chair, and he had crossed over.
Uh-huh.
But
well, he knew. Okay.
He knew. I mean, and he knew who to come to tell me, oh, come and get me now, you know. you know, I tell people, they know when it's time. And at 18 years old, that's very old for a cat.
It is.
And he's very independent. Most cats are. And they're going to do what they want to do.
Okay, but Tony, I'm watching the clock. Can you believe we've already talked an hour?
No, I sure can't.
So that's why I said if I kill, I have to stop or they pull the plug. But tell people how they can contact you if they want you to do something for them, or if they just want to find out more about you. How can they contact you?
I have a website. It's called It's www.angelhandranch.com. That's one word.
AngelHandRanch.com.
Or you can call my office at 830-540-3744.
Okay. And if any kind of animals, but mostly horses is what you specialize in.
It's my general, most of my clients are horses, but I read for lots of cats, lots of dogs, birds, bucking bulls, you name it. I've gotten calls from all kinds of animals. So
all across the board.
Yes.
Okay, so if you want to contact Tony Trimble, that's T-R-I-M-B-L-E, Tony Trimble, and she lives in Texas. It's the AngelHandRanch.com is her website. And you'll have all the information on there then.
I sure do.
Okay, and thanks, Tony, for coming on.
Oh, thank you, Dolores. I sure enjoyed it. Anytime.
And I'm really glad that things have increased for you since the last time I saw you.
Oh, well, thank you. God's blessed me every day.
All right. Okay, well, now it's time for us to leave, and thanks again, Tony.
Thank you, Dolores. Have a good evening.
Yeah, and I'm going to say goodnight to everybody out there. Thanks for listening.
Hi, Peggy Lee.